Welcome to the Heyoka Coach podcast. We're going to go deep, we're going to go heavy on subjects like awareness, energy, awakening to higher states of consciousness, all for the purpose of walking us through our journey from awareness to enlightenment, one moment at a time. You are no longer alone on this journey. I will be with you every step of the way. All right, you ready to roll?
Yeah. Let me start off by thanking you for inviting me on here.
Oh, you're welcome, man. You just touched my heart, and you couldn't have done it at a better time.
Shit. Yeah, it was ironic the way it happened, too. I kind of reached out to you, and I think maybe you were going to reach out to me to see if I wanted to do the podcast. So, and I admire what you're doing. I realize, you saw that I tagged you on that tweet. That you sent me the original podcast, the first podcast, and I could tell just by your voice, just by the passion in your voice, that you mean what you do, that you're passionate about what you do, and you really do want to heal people.
Thank you, man. Thank you. That couldn't have come at a better time. So, all right, man, let's roll. So, all right, everybody, welcome to the Heyoka Coach podcast. Today, I have with me Scott. I'm going to hand it over to Scott in a minute, but first I want to talk about a few things. This is a campfire chat, just two people sitting around having a chat about what our awakening has been like throughout our life, you know, our level of awareness, what it's been like us going through the experience of awakenings, what kind of shadow work we've done, what trials and tribulations that we've had along our journey. So first in a series of interviews, I reached out first to Blunted Buddha, Scott, who I have on the call now. About 4 years ago, I found Twitter and I was struggling. I was going through another major awakening again alone. And I was really wrestling inside again with like, there has to be more help for this. This can't be just me. At that time, I'd gone like 48 years, 40, almost 49 years of thinking I was alone in this. I mean, having some inclination, but always being too afraid to go ask somebody because I've tried it. And, you know, I got those looks like, what are you talking about? So I found Twitter about 4 years ago and stumbled into like inner practitioner, love watching, looking at his deep stuff. He's really been an impact, ginormous Buddha. And a couple years ago, about 3 years ago, I stumbled across Blunted Buddha. I think inner practitioner had retweeted something that he tweeted. And just the energy that I felt in the message was, it just stopped me for a minute. And I thought, okay, first Blunted Buddha. All right, the name caught me, right? And I was like, okay. At that time, 4 years ago in my awakening, I had just moved to Arizona. The plane was landing. I looked at the mountains and the mountains said, get up here because you got some work to do. And then what I did is I did what I was being called to do. Just inside of me was saying, get on those mountains. So I hit the base of the mountain and said, all right, what's this about? Started climbing the mountain and started doing the deep work. And that's when the heavy messages started coming. That's when the high-pitched squealing in my ears started again. This goes way back from my childhood. And that's when all of the questioning about everything that's going on in my life. Is everything that you're doing right now, is it what you're supposed to be doing? So I was struggling again. And thank goodness that Twitter was there, because stumbling across these great souls, like I Am My Best, and I heard the interview with her and inner practitioner, some great stuff in there. Check it out.
Yeah,
but this is, did you see that? Oh man, just great stuff.
That was the first one that I heard from inner practitioner. And, you know, I knew I would be impressed with him. I was also impressed with I Am My Best.
Yeah, for sure. You can just feel her heart come through. It's just amazing. I actually, some of the things she was saying in there about, you know, her claircognizance and all, I was like, uh-oh, I need to talk. She's talking my language. But no, it was stumbling into you, right? And right then, you know, I didn't know it was different than some of my other awakenings. I was getting different signals. And so I'm going to pause there, because that's my story. And that talks a little bit about me and why I'm doing this. You know, I have a podcast on why I do this. That was the first one, because I was alone and I don't want anybody to be alone going through this, because this is scary stuff to try to do alone. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to literally hand this over to Scott. I want him to just run with this. However he feels, however it flows, let's just go, man. Tell us about you. Tell us about your journey and just take it away, man.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of similar thing. I started Twitter in July of 2018, and I didn't know there was such thing as spiritual spiritual Twitter. I knew there were Buddhists there, and that's, you know, what I am. So I figured I would be part of this Buddhist community that was relatively small, but I've become involved in this bigger community of spiritual Twitter. And I think we're very fortunate. You know, I'm so fortunate to know Inner Practitioner is on, the fact that he retweets my stuff, the fact that he shares his knowledge and his wisdom with us. And then same thing with some of the other accounts. I'm just, you know, I'll read something and it's the exact problem that I'm dealing with or something that I need to work on. And it's just like, oh, you hit the bullseye with that one. So we're very fortunate to have this group of people.
Yeah, you say that, and I actually, you said that, and it made me chuckle because I'm like, man, I actually think I replied to him once, get out of my head, Inner Practitioner. Yes. And he just laughed. But I mean, it's like some of these words are being spoken right to you, you know, and I just, that's what this is about, man. So, so go on.
Inner Practitioner, more than anybody I've ever met, I've never met him in person, but we've talked via DM. He has an intuition. Like, I mean, he'll say something that's going on in my life without me telling him. It's crazy. So it's, you know, again, we're fortunate. But I'll give a quick introduction. So again, my name is Scott. I'm 43. I'm married, happily married. I have 3 kids. I'm an entrepreneur. I own Leon Organics, which is a CBD skincare and wellness company. I own Mindful, which is still a startup. I kind of started as an apparel company, but I'm pivoting to more of a spiritual content company. Mindful is spelled MINDFOOL. It's a play on the Buddhist word mindful. So you know, again, I launched that in 2018, not knowing what I'm doing, just completely arrogant, not knowing the fashion world at all. And I thought I was going to make a splash, and it just didn't happen.
But we all
learn lessons. We all learn lessons. So, you know, I think one of the mistakes I made with Mindful is I just wasn't given enough value. And I can write spiritual stuff for days. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to rebrand it as more of a spiritual account and put out content. And then I'll still sell shirts on the side, you know, but my passion is writing. So that's where I really want to be. So those are the 2 companies. I still work my 9-to-5 job too. So I'm a very busy man. I do Blended Buddha. Blended Buddha is kind of like my escape, because I work 12 hours a day almost every single day, and you know, I can pop open the Twitter app and go into a different world of philosophy and poetry and beauty and spirituality and get away from the stress of everyday work. So
yeah, for sure,
I've really found balance in it of working and play, because Blended Buddha to me is play.
I like the way you say that. It's because that speaks to the child within us, right? I mean, you know, and through Twitter and through being able to digest the mass amount of spiritual data that you can mine within Twitter and in all socials, you know, I just recently started Instagram, and just it's just amazing. Even on there, you know, it's the same type of material, you know, not identical, but, you know, the same people and the same type of material. It's just, it's amazing. So speak a little bit about your journey. When we talk about awakenings, let's say, like, not necessarily an exact timeline, but, you know, throughout your life, did you have, you know, epiphanies? What was your spiritual journey like, and how did you get there?
So my story is the story of somebody that's very sensitive. I've always been sensitive my entire life, ever since I was a kid. And I don't think I'm an empath. I don't, you know, I don't feel other people's emotions. But if I know someone's hurting, my heart goes out to them. I feel my own emotions very strongly. So if something's going on with me, I really feel it. And it caused me a lot of suffering, a lot of problems, a lot of suffering when I was young. One of the things that I did to kind of dull that sensitivity was drugs. So that's the other part of my story, is being extremely sensitive and being addicted to drugs. One of the things that became glaringly apparent to me, I mean, I knew it was already there, but when awakening came, it became very apparent to me that I have addictive personality. So as that awareness and that consciousness in that area of my life has developed, I've been able to, through my spiritual awakenings, I've been able to move away from all of the drugs. I mean, I still use marijuana, but right now I'm doing sober May. So it's been 7 days since I've smoked pot completely. I'm not taking anything. So,
fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I was rebellious in my teens, because my teens is when I discovered drugs. And for me, it wasn't marijuana. I did smoke marijuana when I was young, and that was my very kind of first spiritual awakening, but it was more of like an ego death. It wasn't a pleasant thing at all. And it messed with me a good part of my life, you know, early 20s, late 20s, into my 30s. I was still kind of recovering from it. And I stopped smoking marijuana because of it too. It was like 19 when this happened. I stopped smoking pot by the time I was 20. I didn't pick it up again until I was 35, I think. But for me, it was the drugs. It was the drugs of Big Pharma. So I had I was addicted to both Valium and Percocet in my life. Valium was the big one. I was on it for 23 years. I was trying to get off of it for 18 years. And it wasn't that much of a hindrance to my life unless I didn't take it. If I didn't take it, my brain didn't work. And I had this job. I still have this job that requires my brain. You know, I do sales. I sell technical stuff. So it really requires a high amount of brain power. And when I stopped taking Valium, my brain just wouldn't work. And it's not like I could take like a 2-week vacation and get over it. Like, I was taking Valium for so long that the withdrawal was months and years, not like a couple weeks. So I just had to wean my way off of it really, really slow. And during this time, everything was just in black and white. Everything was just, there was no hope. There was no joy in my life. I mean, I don't want to say no, because, you know, there's a lot of really good things that happened, but sure. It was just a very difficult time for me, and that sensitivity was dulled out. Everything was just dulled out. It was just getting by. And during this time, I discovered Buddhism and spirituality. I started taking Valium because, again, I had this high-pressure job. I thought that I needed something to handle the stress. And I discovered meditation, and meditation kind of took away all that anxiety for me. So in my mid-20s, like 24, 25, you know, I really got into spirituality and Buddhism, and the stress became much more manageable, the anxiety became much more manageable, but I was still addicted to this pill that I couldn't get off, that I didn't need anymore, but I couldn't get off of because it was so physically addictive.
Had a hold of you big, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I just, if I could touch on this a little bit, you talked about you dulled your senses out. That resonates with me big time, because alcohol was my drug of choice growing up, right? Not that we didn't have weed around. My parents had weed. I mean, not like they had a lot, but they would have an 1/8 ounce that would last them, you know, a year or whatever, you know. It'd just be that thing that came out once in a while, hidden from the kids, so to speak. But it's really that. I mean, when you talk about dulling out your senses, I remember that we always had beer. You know, the Pabst Blue Ribbon was always around. So, you know, 12, 13 years old, I was a highly sensitive kid. And I mean, like really sensitive, high allergies, I mean, asthma, just all of the things that come with a sensitive child, and along with the emotional sensitivities on top of it. So having all that and trying to find balance in my everyday life, and then once you find this little sip of alcohol that takes your frequency and lowers it just a little bit, you know, and it takes that edge off, and it makes you, in air quotes here, like everybody else, right? I'm no longer that highly sensitive person. I'm this slightly dulled, and now I'm fitting in. Now I'm able to communicate with everybody. You know, they're not looking at me with their eyes like, what? You know, looking at me like a dog with their head tilted because they don't know what I'm saying. Because now I'm able to ease into the conversation and be one of them, again, with air quotes, you know. Yeah. It allowed me to feel like I could fit in, because being highly sensitive and having, you know, this different level of awareness of about people's emotions. And I just want to say one thing to you. And I heard I Am My Best talk about it a little bit as well. You know, the sensitivities of an empath, it's not binary, you know, and I'm sure you understand this. A highly sensitive kid that is sympathetic and empathetic, even if it's just a little bit above the norm, doesn't make one an empath, so to speak. And I'm not really big on labels. I mean, anything that even remotely looks like census data, I'm running from the hills and don't want to talk about it. So I'm really against the label part. And listening to you, it sounds a bit like you may have had some sensitivities, and maybe turning to drugs might have allowed the same mechanism in which I used it. At least, you know, I'm just thinking out loud here.
Yeah, I mean, it may be very rebellious in my teens. And, yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's really just about making yourself fit in is what it was. You know, I used the words being less sensitive, but ultimately the goal was to fit in. And that's what, you know, these, For me, it was pills. For you, it was alcohol allowed us to do.
Yeah, forms, as you're talking, the fit in, the infamous fitting in.
Yeah.
There's so much pressure with that. And I think the cliques are even more rampant now. There's not the one or two or three when I grew up, you know, the jocks, the druggies, and the nerds, or, you know, I don't even remember what they were, but there's not the three anymore. There's like 75 different divisions of cliques. And I don't know how people are surviving in that today.
Yeah.
They're identifying with so much. And when I say there, believe me, I'm talking about myself too, because I catch myself daily pointing at somebody when I'm really looking at the mirror, you know, because pretty much anything I say is a reflection of me as well.
Oh, yeah.
But it's all these cliques. And can you imagine the pressure on kids today trying to fit in? Go ahead, please. You had something to say.
Yeah, there. I was going to say that we're lucky that we grew up in a time where there wasn't social media, because social media is a big part of it, especially for the kid, you know, because they see this person has this, and everybody puts their highlights on social media. They don't put when they're just sitting around on the couch looking lazy and ugly. They, you know, they put up the highlights of when they look like they're a superstar. So it's very, number one, that you're unrealistic. And to go back to my other point is that these kids see this, and, you know, we all search for value in this world. It's one of the things that we do unconsciously, and value has many forms. Beauty is value. Money is value. Knowledge is value. You know, somebody might be at a good at a specific sport, so they have value there. And it's my belief that we all have the same equal amount of value in this world. We're all humans. We're all children of God. You know, we all have spirit in us. And this search for value, I think it comes from kids not getting the love that they should as children. So, like, if, you know, your parents don't pay attention to you, or maybe your dad wasn't in your life or whatever, you compensate for that by trying to find value in the world. And I do it, you do it, everybody does it. And I think that bringing awareness to this process can help transform it, you know, because the things that we do semi-consciously and unconsciously, it's just automatic. We just do it. But if you put awareness on it, you can say, okay, well, why am I doing this? Is this value even out there, or is it really within?
Absolutely. I love that. And it really does come back to awareness is the key, isn't it? You know, and we can say this a million times, and I can say these in phrases as if this is something that comes easy for me, but you on the other side of the line know that when I sit down in my half lotus position, I'm having the same wrestling match that everybody else is, you know. It's just in a different form, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at trying to, if we could get back a little bit to the, I had mentioned something about forms, and then you started and you went back and you talked about school again, which is perfect, because when you think about all of those divisions in school and divisions in life and, you know, your work divisions and the hierarchy of employment, these all create in essence this illusion of form, of hierarchy. And you talked a lot about family, and, you know, if you know, you had like me, you know, my dad at an early age took off, you know, left my mom, didn't pay child support, and I didn't see much of him, and still don't. And it's very unfortunate, you know, we'll text once in a while and things like that, but it's a huge loss. And as you said, that creates a void within me, and that and what I've realized within me is I became an overhelper. You know, I became this one that was very helpful for people and always there and available. And I feel that's part of where my, as I'll say, the stronger empathy, the stronger sensitivity had started to come from, is that strong seeking. But how do we, let's talk about that pattern, right? Because this is what we talk about on Twitter back and forth all day long. You know, all of us, we're stuck in the forms, we're stuck in this pattern, or we're stuck in this loop, or we can't, you know, I can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, whatever it is. When you were going through these wrestling matches with yourself, and what did you grasp onto? find solace on? What can we leave people with some of these nuggets as we continue to talk here? What are some things that we can leave them with that give them some light of hope that says, just keep pushing on, this gets easier, or whatever it might be?
Because once Maya is dissolved, and that's what you were talking about just now, all the forms, all the hierarchies, all the, you know, this clique and that clique, who's popular, who has a great, it's just Maya. It's all form. It doesn't mean anything. As the substances, we're all sources, substance. We're all made out of the same things. We're God looking at each other from different perspectives. So once you leave Maya behind, once you leave that illusion of this is me, this is my ego, these are the things I need to do to be successful and happy in life, you develop all new values and you discover beauty and power in yourself that you didn't know was there. I just did a tweet, I think it was yesterday. Yeah, there's something around this idea of value and when you, authenticity, power and authenticity. There's power in authenticity that you don't yet see. You don't see it because you're stuck in Maya, you're stuck in form. You're stuck in what the world thinks you should be instead of what your soul or your spirits want you to be. And that was one of the really, you know, I say all the time that my sensitivity caused me so much suffering in my life. And now it's my superpower. Now because I've owned it, now because, you know, I'm able to find that balance. And balance is a really good word, too. I don't know what you were talking about earlier, but I was going to interrupt you and say, yeah, man, it's all about balance, because that's what I've found. I found that, you know, I remember what you were saying. You were talking about how nice you are and you're, you know, overcompensating for your dad leaving. Number one, I do the same thing. You know, my dad didn't leave me when I was young, but I grew up with my mom until I was 13. And then I moved in with my dad. And I guess I kind of felt abandoned, you know, probably. But I've always been compassionate. I've always wanted to help. And I've kind of went through the same kind of conclusions and bringing awareness to it of, okay, am I helping for the right reasons or am I helping because I feel invalid right now or not good enough right now? So a lot of my journey as I've moved from someone that's, you know, I've had a lot of things, like I said, sensitivity or dulling my sensitivity with drugs and everything else. But now I'm to the point, hopefully to the point where I'm making decisions for the right reasons instead of trying to fill a void that's inside of me.
I love that you added hopefully to the point.
Yeah, because we're all human,
right?
It doesn't
matter. I know, man. And here's the thing. I swear, 2 months ago, man, I'm like, dude, I got this. I'm like, man, I'm like getting ready every day. I'm feeling all this balance. And it takes one pinprick, man. And I just like, holy crap, I didn't even see that. I had, you know, just some level of awareness of some little stumble that I did. And I thought, I better not just skip over that, you know, because we tend to do that. Something will happen. And we're like, meh, whatever. But something happened and I'm like, I'm not just going to gloss that over. That rubbed me the wrong way or something. And I need, as you know, I'll steal some of your words. I decided I was going to bring the flashlight of awareness to it and go see what that was. Mm-hmm. And here's what's just miraculous about this. Something that I had dismissed and two or three moments had gone by and thought, nah, and I pedaled back and I snagged whatever it was again. And I thought, I'm going to meditate on that. So I gave it a little bit more thought to cement it. Later, I went and meditated on it, and then boom, it like opened up a whole, like I would say, and I'm a strong visual person, it opened like a dark cavern within me that I didn't know existed of pain that was being stored that I didn't know was there over something that whatever it was just triggered that. Although it seemed very small at the time, I've learned over the past 4 years, especially, not to ignore those things. And I know Inner is probably going to be like, you guys, you keep using my name, but really it's about, I mean,
I'm getting ready to tell an Inner story too, when you're done, just so you know. So go ahead.
Okay. So he said, you know, and I read something that he said, it's like, don't ignore even the small things. And in my business, I'm a business coach and I do process improvements and we have things called weak signals, system dynamics. And don't ignore the low and weak signals, because that's where some of the gold is. Yeah. So go ahead with your story, man.
Yeah, I say the unconscious and semi-conscious things we do is what really interests me, because I think that's where our growth is. You know, if shining that light of awareness, you can really see what's going on.
Close that gap, right?
Yeah, the inner practitioner story I was going to tell you, this just happened last night or two nights ago, one of the two. He quoted out something about shame, about how when you feel shame, you got to own it. You got to really step into it and experience it. Otherwise, it's going to own you. And I don't remember how his tweet was worded, but it really hit home for me because I still deal with shame from time to time. You know, I'm not a perfect person now, and I definitely wasn't a perfect person before 2018. So I did a lot of dumb shit. And even after, even after awakening, you know, I'm minding my business, and all of a sudden I feel shame out of nowhere. And me being a Buddhist, me knowing all these things, I should have known, you know, step into that. Don't push it away. So when I read this quote from, or this tweet from inner practitioner, and it really just hit home. And I sat there for almost 2 hours. I wasn't meditating, but I was laying in bed. And I was really just trying to feel that feeling of shame, like step into it, remember the incident, how I felt, and really just try to. And at the end of it, it was beautiful. I cried. Like, it's hard for me to cry. It's hard for men to cry. But it's really hard for me to cry, too. I don't know why. You know, even though I am sensitive, I just don't cry that much. I mean, I'm a dude, so it is what it is. But it was such a healing cry, too, man. Like, it was just like.
Yeah.
It felt so good to do, and I immediately sent him a DM, like, dude, you're freaking amazing. Thank you.
And then you followed up with gratitude, which, like, seals the deal for you, too, because not only did you clear that darkness out, you went and spread the love, man. So you got that back right away. That's beautiful.
And now I have tools. I have tools to deal with it. I have tools to deal with it in the future. So if I feel, you know, if something comes up from my past and I'm like, oh, you know, I don't go anymore. I'm going to step into it and feel it so I can own
it. So let's talk about that a minute, because now you're talking about shadow work, right?
Yeah.
I mean, on the surface, you know, I actually, and dude, if you want to come back to the help with the podcast on shadow work, brother, we can talk it up. But really, it's little, I call it, I just coined a phrase, micro healing, right? I doubt I coined it, but relative to spirituality, I just kind of said, there's micro healing. And that's kind of what you're talking about. It's that step in, right? Mm-hmm. I did it, and I thought that it was just this little nuisance. But when I opened it up, it was huge. Mm-hmm. And you have something that drags you the wrong way. And because of your meditation and in your Buddhist studies, you know that you have to go into that. And after reading what inner practitioner said, you knew to sit in it. And that leads to something that, I mean, it's amazing. Inner practitioner posted something 2 months ago. I actually reached out to him by a DM, something he posted on shame.
That's a good sign. That's a good sign that there's something there.
Oh man. You're like, I was mad, and I like zipped by it, and I was like, bing, 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 bing. You better go back up there, buddy, because something rang your bell. I went up there, and it was just like something about shame, you know, and it, maybe it was similar to one or that you did, but sitting in it and acknowledging it. And I did. And I had a lot of shame about the time that I lost, because there was a period of time before my dad, you know, he started to lose his mind with dementia a little bit, where I could have reached out to him and mended fences. So there was a lot of guilt and shame that I lost that moment, so to speak, with him. And, you know, then, you know, that shame bucket. I mean, holy crap, you go sit in that shame bucket, man, you better be ready for a storm, brother, because it's going to be a big one. I mean, because it's like the deepest emotion.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that was part of his tweet. Shame that it's a guilt. Very low vibration, and you can feel it. You can feel how low the vibration is. So it's very important to get past that shame, because it's going to bring bad shit to your life if you don't own it.
Yeah, absolutely. And what if you could tell me? So and I'll do the same when you feel something come on, and I hear you using the words like feel, and you talk about your your stronger sensitivity. So I'm thinking it's more along the feeling arena. Tell me what the experience is like for you. You know, you, something comes over you. What, walk me through an experience for Scott.
I'm also very analytical. So, you know, I feel things deeply, but I'm also a very logical person. That's one of the things that drew me to Buddhism from a very young age, is nobody was more logical than the Buddha. I mean, it's, if you put him on a political debate, he would win every single one of them, because nobody can out-logic the Buddha. So I'll go back to the spiritual awakening that I had when I was young, because again, it wasn't a spiritual awakening. It was like, it was really just an ego death.
Cool.
And, yeah, I was very egotistical in my teens. I was very, you know, kind of rebellious. I was kind of doing a lot of wrong things. And it became immediately apparent to me that I was getting in my own way, that I was doing this, that my ego had created all these problems. And I might be suffering now, but I was the one that was creating it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had this ego death. And, you know, to answer your questions, in terms of feeling it, I wasn't there yet at that point in my life. I was just, you know, I became aware that I was the one that was getting my own way. And I started reading all this spiritual and Buddhist stuff. And it really started to ripen for me after I moved to Las Vegas. Are you originally from another state, from Arizona, I think I heard you say?
Yeah,
South Jersey, where I was born, to Vegas in 2006 was like one of the best things I've ever did. Because I never fit in the East Coast, you know, and it's probably my fault I didn't fit in. It's not because of anybody else, but, you know, I was just different, man. And when I moved out to the West Coast, I met and saw a lot more people that were spiritual than in the East Coast. So I really kind of was able to ripen my practice just by meeting different people, talking to different people, reading books, going to, you know, seminars. I lived right down the street from these Tibetan Buddhists, and I used to go meditate with them. They lived on the same street with me in Vegas. So it was like all kinds of cool stuff like that. And then I met my wife in 2009. We had a kid in 2013. She has two older kids, 21 and 22. And, you know, Vegas was a little bit tough. I, you know, like I said, my practice really started to ripen. I really started to understand Dharma around this age, like 2010-ish. Things really just started to make sense for me. And, you know, one of the things that I say about life is a dance, because everything around us responds to us. The people in our life definitely respond to us. I mean, if you act like an asshole, somebody's going to act like an asshole back to you. If you act nice to someone, they're going to want to reciprocate. It's a dance, you know, because in a dance, you're paying attention to your partner and your partner responds to your moves. So, you know, I really started to kind of figure these things out. And my son was born in 2013. We moved back to the East Coast temporarily. And it was right around this time I started smoking pot again. I was coming off my addiction of Percocets. I was addicted to Percocets from like 2007 to 2009. And my wife helped me get off Percocets. When I met her was when I was addicted to Percocets. And the family life really just blossomed from there. You know, it was hard for me to talk to my stepchildren sometimes, because, you know, here's this part of me that's nice again. I thought that if I give them space, give them freedom, everything would be fine. You know, that if I'm not too hard on them, but a kid needs way more than that. A kid needs love, affection, attention, all these things. And I didn't really understand it. And we moved back to the East Coast after my son was born, just because we figured it wasn't a good place to raise kids. And I met a mentor there who was a Buddhist, and he was more into the religious aspect of Buddhist than I was, but he was just an amazing person that helped me see all these things that were in my blind spots and helped me understand Buddhism and spirituality better and helped me see how I was getting in my way even further. Because I really think that, you know, whether it's success, spiritual success, business success, or whatever, most of the times it's the stuff that you're doing or not doing that's creating that success or not success. So, you know, and that's another reason why I really love Buddhism. It's a practice of personal responsibility.
Yeah, personal accountability is important, right? I mean, that's, I think when you, I mean, any argument we get in, any discussion where there's a conflict, what's the conflict? Ultimately, somebody's afraid of something, whether it be loss of control or whatever it is. It can quickly get out of control if you're not using your level of awareness. So you mentioned Dharma, and I noticed that you had a blog post on that, bluntedbuddha.com. Can you
Dharma,
expand on that a little bit, please?
Means rules of life, basically. The Buddha used it to explain his teachings. But I think like in Hindu, it means like rules of life or rules of the universe or something like that. It's really just, you know, going back to that logical mind of the Buddha. He just, you know, he came up with all these things that you can do, whether it's different belief systems or stopping doing certain things, identifying where your ego's involved and stuff like that. And it's really just kind of these rules that if you live by, you find balance in your life. And the name of that blog that you read is called Balance, because ultimately the Buddha's Dharma is all about balance. Because if you reach for the positive, well, it's craving, it's clinging, it's attachment. So if you become attached to the good things in life, whether it's a promotion or a love of your life or whatever, you know, through the laws of energy exchange and all that stuff, if you're attached, it's bad energy, it's going to push it away from you. So, you know, what the Buddha says, enjoy the present moment. The Buddha says, don't get attached to the past, enjoy the present. So I'll go back to Vegas real quick. So I discovered medical marijuana. I had a pretty serious back injury in 2010-ish, no, 2011. And went to the doctors. They gave me Percocet. My dumbass takes it. I mean, I knew it was addictive at the time. I mean, I take personal responsibility. I'm not blaming doctors or whatever. But I discovered marijuana, and I hadn't smoked pot in 20 years, you know, 15 years, 16 years, something like that, because I'd had this ego death when I was like 19 and just frankly scared the shit out. But it helped, you know, it helped with pain. It helped me get off of Percocets. One of the things, the very strong things, and this is why I use marijuana to get off of Valium, is it cancels out like an enzyme that's created through the withdrawal process. So it makes the withdrawal process much easier. So that was, you know, kind of how I discovered marijuana. We moved back to the East Coast just temporarily, like 3 years. My wife hated it out there. So, and we also started Lean Organics right around this time. So it just made sense to move to Colorado because we decided we wanted to add CBD to the ingredients. And by this time, like 2017, everything was really good in my life. Everything, you know, I was still struggling with the Valium addiction. But like I said, it wasn't that much of a hindrance unless I forgot to take it or like went on vacation and forgot to bring my pill bottle. Then I'd have a really bad vacation. So, I became an official. I've done it though. So it sucked. Yeah.
That had to be rough, man. I was on Xanax for a while, and I remember coming back from vacation, and we had ended up staying an additional day for, you know, X amount of dollars more, and didn't even consider we didn't have enough medication. Ran out of Xanax a day before.
Yeah, so Xanax and Valium are the same class. They're both benzos. And I actually, I think I started with Valium, and then I moved to Xanax. So even though I was saying Valium, I had a problem with Xanax too. So it is what it is. First off, let me say this about awakening. It's real. It's something that's, I didn't really, you know, I read about it in Buddhist scriptures. I've heard the word spiritual awakening, but I thought it was just somebody that, oh, okay, I'm religious now. You know, I didn't know it was this thing that came with all these reliable things that will happen if you go through awakening. A lot of them were really good for me. My spiritual awakening in 2018 was amazing. Like it was just felt like a god for like 4 months. And then, as you know, from a spiritual awakening, I went downhill after that. Like I went through hell for about 3-4 months, and then I climbed my way out of it.
Yeah. Why do you think that happened?
And getting in my own way. You know, when the awakening happened, and I think I went through two spiritual awakenings. I went through the one when I was a kid, so actually three. In 2017, I moved here to Colorado, decided, okay, I'm getting off this Valium once and for all. and I became a medical user and spent so much money on pot and smoked so much pot because it helped with this, getting off of this. And one day I just woke up and everything was perfect. Everything was great. Like, I didn't have a worry in the world. I wasn't concerned about anything. I was almost off the Valium, and it was very gradual. It wasn't like the Kundalini waking where I knew immediately what was going on. I was just like, man, life is great. I thought it was just because I had moved to Colorado and I was really happy and my wife was happy and we were starting this business. But in retrospect, I think something happened to me, and I think cannabis and meditation is what brought it on. Cause it, you know, again, around this time, 5 years ago, before that, my meditation and my Buddhist practice really started to ripen. And at this point I was meditating every day, 30 minutes a day. And even while I was high, like, I would play around with smoking and then meditating, and I was able to do it. You know, I know sometimes it can get in the way. Most of the times with me, it's laziness, not the ability to focus. But yeah, I mean, cannabis was a big part of it. And that's when I came up with the idea for Blended Buddha, because, you know, I thought I could teach people it, because one of the things I did during this time also was I played with the idea of surrendering into these really strong emotions, whether it was anxiety or fear. And sometimes when you smoke a lot of pot, and as I said, I was smoking a lot of pot back then, it increases it. You feel like super anxious, or you feel really, you know, and I played with the idea of kind of relaxing into it, breathing into it, feeling it, kind of the same idea of what we were talking about earlier with the shame stuff that Zahn had tweeted about. And I really thought that I could mimic it and help people. And I even went to the extent of creating an audio meditation with cannabis, but I took it down almost immediately, within a month, because right around that same time, the Kundalini went from me feeling like a god and my skin glowing and all this amazing shit happening to me, so I just went deep, deep, deep into the underworld. Like, it was just like emotions came up that I thought I had already dealt with. Like, I felt a level of insecurity and just, I mean, it was just really bad. But what kind of got me through it, and this is still true to this day, is I can kind of close my eyes and remember where awakening was. I can remember that confidence and that creativity and the, you know, all the things that came from a positive perspective of my awakening. So it really got me through it.
That's kind of a, once you see it, you can't unsee it thing, right? I mean, it literally, I strongly believe that when we practice meditation, and your practice is obviously solid, when we practice meditation, we allow ourselves to get into these higher states of consciousness, higher vibrational states. And what we're doing is we're training ourselves to ultimately one day remain in that state throughout the entire day. Can you imagine that one day? And like you said, with your Kundalini, it was like 2 months. Man, when I got, with air quotes, struck with lightning.
Same with me. I was on a mountain. I was on a mountain meditating when it started.
No kidding. Oh, wow. That's mountains crazy. Because these mountains over here in Sedona. In Arizona, the energy that comes from them, I can feel it, man. And I was walking up, and it was one of those days, like, I don't want to do this work. You know, I'm like pouting up the hill. I don't want to do shadow work, but I knew I needed to, because I didn't want to. So therefore I knew I needed to. So it's like, all right, why don't you want to go into that? And I'm going up there, and finally I don't take the natural paths. You know, I'll stay on them, but when it starts to get busy, I move off. I stay on the rocks. I don't touch greenery or anything. I really care about that. But I just kind of keep to myself, and because I want to stop every so often and not obstruct the flow of the path. So I get off there, and I'm climbing, and it's Arizona, and it's 100 degrees, and I'm an hour later than I should be on that mountain. And I'm like, a half hour longer to go on a mountain. And I'm just about to give up. And I say, I'm not going to do this. And I said to myself, I don't have the energy. And I started to go down on one knee. And as soon as I touched one knee, lightning struck me. And I mean, it felt like my entire body exploded with white light. Next thing I knew, I don't even remember standing up, but I was standing up and I was throttling up that hill with more energy than I ever imagined me ever having, mm-hmm. and never had
I
that
roared,
amount of energy.
I roared like a lion when it happened to me. I knew immediately something happened. I was meditating. I took some psilocybin. I went into the mountains, same kind of thing where I climbed this big ass mountain, and I got almost to the top, and I found a tree that looked inviting. So I got into lotus underneath of it, and I'm sitting there just. I was just in an amazing state, man. Like, you know, like I said, I was already kind of experienced a spiritual awakening before it. And I was already just in a really, really, really good place. And I was meditating, and I was doing this meditation, this heart meditation, where you focus on your heart and you kind of just, you know, it's not a thing where you're trying to find stillness. It's just kind of feeling what's coming up. And this overwhelming feeling of just love and acceptance. And, you know, it wasn't conceit. It was like I observed my life from beginning to end, and there was more order than chaos. I had done better than I, you know, obviously I'd still make mistakes and stuff like that, but it was like a deep love that I just never experienced in my life. And just as I'm feeling this, I feel something spiral up my spine. Like it felt like a crack, almost like popping a joint almost. And then it went up, and it was like immediately my brain went from a nice six-cylinder engine that has power when you need it, it's comfortable, it's gas efficient, to all of a sudden I was running on like 18 horses, like it was like 18 cylinder, like everything. I became the smartest person in the room no matter what. I mean, I say that cocky, but like I can handle any conversation. Like I could, you know, it was just, it was an amazing feeling. And I'll go back to your original question, which I didn't answer. Is the Kundalini drop because I became egotistical about it? I wasn't too bad because, at this point, my Buddhist practice had already ripened. I was already pretty aware of the ego, but the ego is tricky. Ego, it can slip in and it can take control at any time. And it wasn't that bad for me. But it was bad, you know, and there were certain things that I did that, you know, it is what it is. So as I became aware of, you know, this process, I realized that I'm personally responsible for it. And as soon as I started taking personal responsibility, everything just got better.
Yeah, the personal accountability is the crucial part. And I want to go back to what you were saying about that popping noise. I was like, wow.
It felt good too, right?
I don't know if it's a shifting.
It was like a very positive
fluid in the spine. Yeah, it's like your spine aligns. Yeah, it's almost like everything that was out of alignment in my spine totally straightened up, and I actually felt like a burst of energy shoot up the spine itself. Power, not in like a rocket, you know, like light speed, but definitely moving. So yeah, I had a very similar experience as you did. Yeah, that's amazing. And mine, after that lightning, I got up to the top of the mountain, and it was kind of a blur. You know, I was totally there, totally aware and totally present. But I guess, and I played ice hockey for 12 years, so I would liken it to being in the zone as far as a sports term goes, that it's where all thought just kind of goes away of what you're doing, and you just kind of do it. It just happens. It's like a flow state of how you're existing. And I've heard ginormous Buddha use the flow state quite often. And that really rings true with me because you can feel it. And when you're in that flow state, it's just like nothing. It's like you when you walked in, of course, you know, you're teasing and use the cocky, you know, I'm the smartest one in the room. Mm-hmm. But it becomes the
most
present.
And that's what it is. That's what it is.
Just
because the person that's
happening
in the present moment is the one that's going to be the most effective because everything happens in the present moment.
Yeah. So it's
yeah.
Amazing,
so around this time,
good stuff.
Yeah. Sorry about that. So around this time, you know, my sensitivity really started the reawakening, and I really discovered some of the stuff that we were talking about earlier where I was overcompensating. I've always been a super nice person, and I don't want to call myself a pushover, but certain people were able to push me because they knew my buttons. They knew that I was, you know, scared, you know, so they could say, oh man, this is happening, blah, 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 but it's all, you know what I mean? So stuff like that. So I became able to deal with these really, really, because I've always been able to deal with people except the really difficult people, the really egotistical people or whatever. And now I can handle those people easy. Like I just understand. I know what their their point or their pressure points are, like what makes them upset.
All right, Scott. All right, buddy. I'm gonna do it now. I'm gonna play inner practitioner. So, the people that you hold the most difficulty with were reflecting arrogance towards you.
Well, here's the thing too. Is one of the things that I've discovered about myself is I have an enormous ego. Now, I mean, it's true though. It's true.
I'm totally.
I have an enormous ego. I mean, it's one of another things that came to awakening. Anytime I get myself in a position of power or whatever, in the past I've fucked it up. You know, and I don't want to do that with Blended Buddha. I mean, I've done, you know, I do well in business and stuff like that, and I haven't fucked that up. So I haven't fucked up everything in my life with ego. But ego is something, and this goes back to what I was telling you about getting in my own way. Like, my own ego is what causes most of the problems.
Yeah.
So you're probably right. There is a correlation between me dealing with these people that are really hard and my own ego. So, and then around the same time, I stopped taking Valium. The last Valium I took was July of 2018. And I think the Valium, you know, I said this at the very beginning, that it was dulling my sensitivity. So now I'm able to find it. And I also find like a tenderness in life, man. Like there's just like getting in touch with that awakening and your soul and everything else. Like the soul is delicate. It's tender. And I know you understand this because you just talked about walking in the rocks instead of the grass, probably, you know, because you don't want to harm it in some way. Like, there's such tenderness and love and just compassion in life that if you tune into it, it's so much better and so much more beautiful than the egoic stuff. Any egoic pleasure dwarfs in comparison to the love you can feel if you turn into your heart.
Oh, man. That's beautiful, man. I'm with you. It's like an implosion. You know, I think about how much I've been trying to keep everything away from me my whole life. Like, no, protect yourself, protect yourself, protect yourself. And as soon as I surrendered to it, as soon as I went in and allowed it, then it like collapsed in on itself, and then the quasar explosion went outward of love. And you know, like you were saying, and I wrote down the word tenderness, and that word just touches me deeply. Yeah. My word was gentleness. The word that came to me was gentleness. And I found myself walking each step. I was being more gentle when I walked, and I was talking to people with a whole different level of gentleness. And I wanted to circle back with you. You said you were tucking your boy in earlier, or at least moved him upstairs for this call. How did your relationship with your boy, or how has this affected
your relationship with those around you? You know, I think I've always been a really good father. And I'm lucky that my father was a great father. My father, you know, not only was he a great father, but he was tender, man. He was so soft and gentle with me, my brother, and my sister. Like, he rarely yelled at us. He was just like, it was just so giving and so loving, and more so than any man that I've ever met in my life. He's just tender. And I got that word tender from the Buddha, because the Buddha was known for his tenderness. Like, he was just a very sensitive and very soft and gentle person. And he was just tender. So, and that's very much, you know, my dad made me that way, because he was like that with me. And that's how I try to be to my son. You know, sometimes I get stressed out with work and stuff like that. And you know, I might be a little bit harder than I should be on them. And I'm always like, oh man, I wish I wouldn't have done that. But, you know, again, bringing that awareness to the situation is helping me change that as well. Mm-hmm. And it's helping me, it's helping me become, more of these qualities that we're talking about, whether it's tenderness, compassion, or whatever, because kids need that, man. Kids really, really need that.
Yeah, they really do. And that's why I stepped into this a little bit. I have five kids and I have five grandkids. We're currently raising one of our grandkids, and in a couple of weeks, we're going to be raising two.
I'm glad you are.
And we're really looking forward to that. But what I realized, Thank you. And what I'm realizing, and we've been raising her for over 5 years, almost 6 years now. So we've had her from day one, pretty much. But what I'm realizing, Scott, and that's why I asked the question about your boy, is I'm doing things totally different than I did the first time around with my kids. I mean, that my love of awareness is just blown wide open compared to what it used to be. And it's not that what I did was wrong or, you know, it was what I knew was what I thought was right at the time, you know, just like our parents were doing what they thought was right at the time. But I realized that there's been a monumental shift in my approach to just about everything to come to parenting. I mean, literally across the board, but especially when it comes to how I parent. You know, it shifted how I'm relating with all my kids and grandkids, but absolutely in the ones that we're responsible for every day. It speaks to the tenderness, and you can't get to tenderness if you're not present. And what I was finding was I would be playing with her, but my mind isn't there. You know, I'm going through the motions in essence, and she's highly sensitive. I mean, I'm thinking maybe empathic as time goes on, but you know, obviously at five, she's unable to communicate any of that yet, you know, with any certainty.
Yeah.
And I'm being careful with what I ask, of course, because, you know, for obvious reasons, but as she, you know, as they move forward and the allowance of them to live in their emotions like your father did, and considering the time, you were pretty lucky because not a lot of men gave themselves permission to have that outward sensitive feminine and masculine balance like it seems your dad did. So you were
and he wasn't even that feminine. I'm probably more feminine than my dad. My dad was masculine, but when it came to us, he was, you know, he was very calm, sensitive, very careful with our feelings and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think I might be misunderstood at times. I go with the power versus force and the David data, masculine and feminine.
Yeah.
You know, men and women can both, they both have both, you know, the agape and eros energy within them. And it's a matter of finding balance of those two energies in, you know, in the duality world, if you will, and then rising above that with the higher level of enlightenment. But when I speak of feminine energy relative to your dad, I'm referring to mainly like the sensitivities and the tenderness that he shows you, the, you know, that type of energy, you know, not the old I'm putting on a front that I'm a badass. Cause frankly, that's without having a dad around, buddy, I put on the badass. I mean, I have armor tattoos on my arms, that it's like, don't bother me. Stay away from me. You know, I'm protecting myself. And it took me forever to learn to shed that armor, man, forever to learn to be able to go inside and trust my feelings so I could trust them with others.
Do you mind if I ask you a question?
Because I was hiding, man, forever.
So I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right.
No, Hiyoko, please do, man.
I did some Googling right before our call. It sounds like it's like a Native American spiritual type thing. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for asking. It's Hayoka coach. Hayoka is how you pronounce it. And I do not have Native American descent, for one. I'll just make that very clear. And I don't claim any of that. You know, it's all, in my opinion, that's all labels and forms and all of that. What I've noticed, I'm a very strong, highly high frequencied empath, for good and bad, because it gets, you know, it's hard to manage at times. The frequencies come in, the signals come in, and I am my best talked about it really good in her discussion with inner practitioner that, you know, sometimes it's hard to balance that high form of energy. So I started it in the internet, right? As soon as I hit Twitter and I started to, oh, it's spirituality. Oh, and I started doing a lot of searches and realized that I was an empath, realized that as far as the clairs go, that I'm checking the boxes on pretty much most of those within reason. Obviously, I'm not moving things with my mind and things like that. But some of these strengths of the psychic energies, if you will, again, labels, I hate labels because, oh, he says he's a psychic, you know, all these, it's about energy. All this is about energy, and people wrap language around it to try to have discussions about it. And unfortunately, that creates ways people can judge it because, you know, that's just the way the world goes around. But really, it's a matter of it. It's I'll kind of reflect it back to what you said, Scott. when you go inside and you find your Buddha self and you are present there, that's what I'm talking about. The difference I sense between this and that is there seems to be more ability on the part of an empath, especially depending on what clair that you are stronger in, have the ability to use that energy in other ways. You know, you can direct that energy. You can, and I don't suggest that this isn't the case for everybody. Frankly, I think everybody has the ability to have the same level of energy that everybody else does. Much like you said, that everybody, if they take up the practice of meditation, can eventually reach enlightenment if they do the work and follow the right protocols and don't think it's just a thing where you got to check boxes. This is hard work, man. This is very hard work. It's the hardest work anybody will ever go through. At least it was for me. I don't know about you.
Well, I never thought I would be still here. Standing. I never thought, you know, I was just some poor sap trying not to up until 2014-ish when things started to get better. And then even when I moved to Colorado and you know, I kind of had this spiritual awakening, I didn't realize it for it. I just thought everything was just good. But I never thought I would be. I've never written a line of poetry or a line of philosophy in my entire life until July of 2018. As soon as that awakening happened, it was like, boom, ideas just completely. So I never thought that I would be in this position. I never thought that I would be considered somebody as an authority on spirituality or Buddhism. But I'm honored, you know, I'm honored and I'm, you know, trying to do the best that I can. And I think, and this is one of the reasons why I reached out to you, man. Like I can sense the sincereness and, you know, even before we talked, like, I'm glad you sent me the podcast ahead of time because I was able to hear like your vocal tone and everything else. But there's a seriousness and like a true caring and a true wanting to heal that I just admire, man. It's amazing. I love it.
Well, thank you for that, Scott. I appreciate it. And you talked about it's an honor to be able to feel the Buddha energy. And I want to tell you in closing that, Scott, it's been an honor to have this discussion with you, man. I've learned a lot, and I hope a lot of the listeners do as well. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to throw it back to you, and I'd like you to just give a closing for everybody.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Just say bye to everybody.
Hopefully this is the first of many of our conversations. So we'll see how that goes. And, you know, my platform is about love. You know, my platform is about, you know, why do we chase this value in the world, whether it's, you know, being popular or having money or whatever the case be. What's important is love and compassion and getting along. You know, my platform is about stopping racism, stopping homophobia, stopping sexism, because we're all human. We all have an ego. And when you look within, when you truly confront your own ego, things get better in your life and you stop blaming. You don't say this happened to me because these people were Asian and I'm white or whatever. You know, you stop blaming people and you take personal responsibility. And I'm not perfect, obviously. You know, I don't claim to be anybody's guru. I'm just a writer and a poet. But hopefully I'm spreading some positivity in the world. One other thing before we go back, this is more towards you than your audience, is finding that balance, man, because it is all about balance. You know, similar to you, I was a very compassionate person. That's a very giving person. I give everything to everybody. I just do. And people take advantage of me sometimes, and I've been taken advantage of. So part of my awakening was finding that balance. Yeah. And for me, it was looking within and saying, okay, why am I doing this? Am I doing this because I want this person to like me, or am I doing it because they truly need help? So, but it's just something I was thinking about that I figured I'd talk to you about before we end it.
Thank you, Scott. And I really appreciate you taking the time to share your journey within with everybody. I hope they're able to take a little bit away from this.
Take care.
Thank you again for showing up, man.